All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world, and happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is October 1st, 2025. Happy government shutdown day. The government is officially shut down, and I just can't figure out what kind of sandwich to make. It's kind of my reaction to it. Don't threaten me with a good time. Government is shut down. And so, you know what? Gold and silver are ripping on this news. $3,900. Wow. Like Luke Wilson. Wow. Or was it Owen Wilson? It was one of the Wilsons. It's wow. $3,900. Holy crap, guys. I mean, we all kind of knew gold was going to go higher this year. Most people had projections based, you know, President Trump was going to do his tariff thing and fiscal situation was going to get worse. We all kind of knew gold was going to go higher here, but $3,900 by October, I think that surpasses most expectations. Overnight, the front month gold contract hit a high of $3,922. Spot went as high as $3,895. Now, we've since pulled back from that level a little bit. But its metals are just ripping here. Silver along for the ride. $47.81 was the overnight high for that front month silver contract. Spot went as high as $47.56. Guys, I like the shiny. You may have heard that. I think I may have mentioned that once or twice that I like the shiny here. And today is no exception. So, look, the government is shut down. It started at midnight. That is at least the prevailing wisdom as to what's driving this thing higher. You know, at the end of the day, the government is going to reopen at some point. We don't know how long, probably because there is going to be some kind of deal between Republicans and Democrats where they increase spending in exchange for other increased spending. In other words, they're just going to borrow and spend more, which is what is ultimately driving this move to gold, right? The only way the government can continue to finance its reckless behavior is through financial repression, through negative real yields on bonds, which means the rate of inflation is higher than the interest rate accumulating on those bonds, which means if you lend money to the government, you're losing spending power over time. That's the only way this can work. And it appears that that is their plan to continue doing so indefinitely. And so, yeah, gold, silver while you're at it. Now, meanwhile, we have a deteriorating jobs market here. We got ADP private payrolls this morning. This is interesting. 32,000 jobs lost for the month of September. Uh-oh, we got a neggy where there's supposed to be a posse. Job losses. It's almost like the labor market was never really that strong this whole time. If only somebody had been warning about that for years. But I digress. Also noteworthy in this ADP private payrolls is that the August number was revised sharply lower. It was previously a gain of 54,000 jobs. Now it is a negative 3,000. Big downward revision to ADP private payrolls. They're saying there was some kind of a recalibration in the data. So ADP is getting in on the downward revisions game, filling in for the government that shut down. And I hope you like this ADP private payrolls data, guys, because that's the best you're going to get for the foreseeable future. With the government shut down, there will be no non-farm payrolls report on Friday this week. That means ADP is all we have. And, well, it's not good. ADP ain't good. We're flying blind here. By the way, speaking of no jobs report, the Bureau of Labor Statistics is in the news. EJ Antoni, who had previously been nominated by President Trump to run the Bureau of Labor Statistics after he fired the last girl because she was just awful at her job. Well, EJ Antoni was withdrawn for consideration at the BLS. It looked like he was not going to get through Senate confirmation. So keep an eye on that one. I don't know who they're going to nominate next, but there's worries that the new person at the BLS is going to be a sycophant who just makes the numbers say whatever President Trump wants them to say. I'm not saying that is what's going to happen. I'm saying that is the worry. So whoever gets put in that position needs to be someone with credibility and professional, I don't know, pedigree, not just a political hack. Like maybe we don't have Candace Owens run the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You kind of what I'm saying. You picking up what I'm putting down here? Also going on this morning, the European Union will be ramping up steel tariffs on Chinese overcapacity. If only somebody had done a video about Chinese overcapacity just 14 hours ago. Oh, that's right. I did. Yeah. Interesting. It's kind of interesting because what's her name? Ursula over there at the EU. She's still like pearl clutching over the tariffs that the United States put on European goods. And now she's getting in on the whole tariff game. And the trade war is spreading, guys. Europe and China firing salvos back and forth now. We've got, speaking also of the trade war, Taiwan has rejected U.S. demands for producing half of their chips in the United States. Never really expected Taiwan to do that. I mean, the whole reason for Taiwan's economy being as strong as it is because of the semiconductor industry. So demanding that they intentionally devalue their own industry was never really a reasonable expectation. Also, chips is really the main reason the United States military would come to the defense of Taiwan, besides the whole like not letting communism take over the world thing. So Taiwan never really had an incentive to finance chip production in the United States. I don't know why we expected them to. So no big surprises there. But I wonder, like, how is Trump going to follow up on this now? The threat of tariffs on chips was always the stick that was going to get them to produce chips here domestically. Now that they're refusing, are we going to put tariffs on chips and potentially derail this AI bubble, which is going to burst anyway? I don't know. Time will tell. We also got Lithium America's stock, ticker LAC. That is ripping this morning on more news of the government taking stakes in company. The U.S. government is taking a stake in Lithium Americas along with its Thacker Pass joint venture with General Motors, which is the only viable lithium project in the United States. Look, the United States government is turning into a hedge fund here, buying up chunks of companies. And for better or worse, that's what they're doing. That's in the news this morning. We've got Nike earnings. Nike stock is up this morning on a unexpected 1% growth in sales. 1% growth in sales. They were expecting a 1% decline in sales. So I guess that's a good number, overlooking the fact that their profits declined by 31%. Yikes. Big drop in profits at Nike. The stock is up. It shouldn't be. Nike is grotesquely overvalued here. Tariffs are just killing that company's profit margins. We got mortgage rates. Mortgage refinance demand dropped sharply by 21% last week on higher interest rates. Interesting, higher interest rates. Rates continue to go higher since the Fed lowered them. It's funny how that works. By the way, the 10-year yield is down this morning on that ADP payrolls note. So rates are a little bit higher than they were when we cut interest rates, not by a whole lot. We've got Houthi and the Blowfish are at it again, blowing up boats in the Red Sea. Trump RX. What the heck is Trump RX? We're going to have to talk about that one. And JP Morgan is getting in on the private credit game. They are launching a private credit ETF. Why? To make it easier to sell that garbage to you. As always, we'll talk about that at the end of the show. So stick around for that one. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and see what's going on in the world of finance today? Don't forget that like button. You new guys, hit that beautiful subscribe button right next to it so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every single day. And right now, the S&P 500 is in the red, 28-29 points lower, or 0.44%. We've got the Dow is also down about the same amount, about a quarter of a percent lower here, 107 points in the red. Now, interesting, kind of like a 28-point flip just there that second. We'll say 100 and change lower for the Dow. And the NASDAQ is leading the way lower here, down almost a half a percent, 114 points in the red this morning. So stocks are down across the board on this government shutdown news. Looking over at the U.S. dollar, we've got a weaker Dixie here, 26 basis points lower here. And of course, you're probably noticing this big red candle here at 8:15 a.m. Eastern time. That was that ADP private payrolls report. When that hit, we saw the dollar suddenly weaken on that news. That, in my opinion, is bets that the Federal Reserve will continue to cut rates based on that weaker data. Lower rates at the Fed means a weaker dollar. It's interesting, though, stocks are not participating in that. Typically, when we see the market react to say, oh, the Fed is going to do a thing, stocks are the first to react. They are not reacting today. Stocks appear more worried about the weakening economy than what the Fed is going to do. It's not that big of a difference. It's not that big of a change from some previous reactions, but that's noteworthy this morning. Also going on this morning, we've got interest rates are lower across the board. The 30-year yield is down 2.5 points at 4.707. The 10-year yield is at 4.104. That's down 4 points and change. The 2-year is at 3.543, off by 6 points. And the 1 month is at 4.09. That's lower by 2.5 points this morning. Interest rates moving a little bit lower. We got some people going for the perceived safety of bonds on that bad ADP payrolls report. And looking over at the commodities board, metals are looking good once again this morning. They are, though, off their highs from overnight. Spot gold is at $3,868. That's higher by 10 bucks or about a quarter of a percent. We hit a high overnight of $3,895.33. Meanwhile, the December front month contract is at $38.95, just below that $3,900 mark. We hit a high overnight of $39.22.67. But right now, that front month future is up by $20, about a half a percent higher. Silver also getting in on the action. Spot silver is at $47.32 after hitting a high of $47.56 overnight. But right now, we're higher by 66 cents or 1.4%. And that December contract doing pretty much the same thing, $47.45, higher by 81 cents or 1.74%. The metals are looking good here. I like the shiny. Meanwhile, copper is a little bit lower here by a quarter of a percent. Platinum is also lower by a quarter of a percent, not participating in the rally we're seeing in gold and silver. Palladium's doing even worse, down 1.3%. And WTI crude oil is off by 45 cents or 0.7% lower. $61.92 for November WTI futures. Also, we have got Bitcoin is looking good this morning, higher by $2,500. It seems like Bitcoin likes a government shutdown. We know the average Bitcoin holder likes a government shutdown, but man, not typically used to seeing Bitcoin prices react like this. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. Government shutdown sending Bitcoin higher, not terribly surprising here. 116,585 points. As priced on Coinbase, up by 2,500 from yesterday. Some levels to watch here, guys. Watch this intraday high from September 18th, where we went as high as 117,998. We'll say 118,000. Watch that level. I want to see us make a higher high before I get any, you know, before I get excited about this, because we are kind of watching this downtrend here in Bitcoin. We're 75 and change weeks after the halving now, so we're due for a big correction downward. As always, be careful on leverage, but maybe, just maybe, Bitcoin's got one more high in it before this cycle is up. I don't know. It's running short on time, but looking good right now. All right, let's talk a little bit. We talked about gold. We talked about silver. We talked about the government shutdown. We got this one from Walter Bloomberg this morning. This is pretty interesting. This is talking about what data points we're not going to get over the next few weeks and days here because of the shutdown. The key reports that have been suspended, the jobless claims, that's we're supposed to get that tomorrow. We're not going to get that. That's those weekly initial and continuing claims. We're not going to have those numbers. We're not going to have the non-farm payrolls report. That's big. That is arguably the single most important data point affecting Federal Reserve policy, affecting the direction of markets in the economy, is that non-farm payrolls, the jobs report. We're not going to get that. That's probably why the market is reacting to this big, the ADP number that came out today. We're also not going to get CPI. Now, we're not due for CPI for, I guess it's like next week, I think we get CPI, maybe the week after, but we're not going to get CPI. That's arguably the second most important data point. We're not going to get retail sales, factory orders, housing starts, trade data, and we're not going to get the employment trends from the conference board. That's not as important here. Now, we are still going to get some reports, all these private sector numbers. We're going to get the ADP report. We'll talk about that in a second. S&P and ISM, that's the purchasing managers indexes or the PMIs. We'll still get those. We'll still get Mortgage Bankers Association mortgage data. We got that today. Challenger job cuts. Macro Edge is still going to be reporting their job cuts. Red Book retail sales, the National, Foundation of Independent Businesses, I think, will get their optimism index. We'll also still get Federal Reserve reports. Remember, the Federal Reserve is a private institution, not a government institution. And so we'll still get consumer credit, industrial production, FOMC minutes. Now, what we don't know about here is things like Treasury reports, monthly budget statements, and the tick flows. So that's kind of like the data we will get, the data we won't get. We'll still have some of it, but those two important ones, the CPI and the non-farm payrolls, we're not going to be getting those until the government reopens. And that could potentially be a problem. Like, what happens if, you know, say this shutdown lasts 2 months and then all of a sudden they reopen the government and we do non-farm payrolls and boom, we lose hundreds of thousands of jobs. And at the same time, CPI goes vertical. Yeah. Yikes. You know, that's like the scene out of a movie where somebody taps the gauge and all of a sudden they realize the tank is about to blow, something like that. Let's talk about some of those data points that we got here. ADP employment change just came out a few minutes ago. There's the number here, negative 32,000. And you can see here, negative 3,000 for August. You can see the steady slope of this trend here, guys. The job market continues to deteriorate. Let's read some of the text that came along with this. Private business in the U.S. cut 32,000 jobs in September, following a revised loss of 3,000 in August, defying forecast for a 50,000 gain. That is a big miss for ADP. It marks the steepest job decline since March of 2023. That's when the banks failed. And the first time since 2020 that the private sector has cut jobs for two consecutive months. The decline partly reflects a recalibration in data analysis. That's interesting. They changed the way they do the math, and all of a sudden we get negative numbers, so that's contributing there. However, the trend was unchanged. Job creation continued to lose momentum across most sectors. The service-producing sector lost 28,000 jobs, mostly in leisure and hospitality. Professional and business services also lost 13,000. Financial activities lost 9,000. Pop-up windows plaguing me here. Let's see. Trade and transport and utilities lost 7,000, offsetting gains in education and health services, which actually gained 33,000. All right, education and health services, that's your local government hiring. That's more nurses and doctors, the aging demographics of the country. Not surprising to see growth there. The goods-producing sector lost 3,000 jobs. That's interesting. 5,000 in construction and 2,000 in manufacturing. We're losing construction jobs despite the build-out in data centers. That means home builders are having more trouble than the data centers are seeing a boom. That's pretty interesting. And also manufacturing losing jobs here. So much for that reshoring narrative. Just a reminder, guys, that the pain of the trade war will get here before any of the benefits ever begin to arrive. You can see that in these numbers as well. Also, we got JOLTS yesterday. JOLTS was kind of a no-never-mind number yesterday, the job openings and labor turnover survey. 7.23 million job openings in the United States. That's up slightly from 7.21 million last month. I don't put a lot of stock in that number. Most of these postings are just fake job openings, jobs that are never going to get filled. Now, also important is job quits. I think this is more important than the JOLTS. We got that one yesterday, 3.09 million. That's down from 3.17 million. Job hugging is the new phrase that we're starting to hear. We went from the great resignation to job huggers in a span of about, what, 3 years, 2 years it took us to do that. You can see fewer people quitting their job. That means they are not confident that they can get another job should they decide to leave their current one. So they're clinging to their job that they have right now. And if you look at a five-year trend, you can see job quits has been steadily in decline since the beginning of March when the Fed began their tightening cycle. All right. Meanwhile, we've got the White House pulls Antoni's nomination for head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. E.J. Antoni was something of a controversial figure, I guess. I don't see why the guy was so controversial, but just the fact that they were replacing the statistics person, that was a big noteworthy story. That is the calling card of a lot of banana republics. Oh, when the numbers don't say what you want, replace the guy who reports the numbers, and then magically the numbers fall in line. I'm not saying E.J. Antoni was going to do that, but that was the worry. I would note here the reasoning. The nomination had already showed signs of faltering after Senator Lisa Murkowski, a Republican on the HELP committee, expressed extreme reservations about Antonio earlier this month. Her vote could have blocked the nomination from advancing through the committee, which is made up of 12 Republicans and 11 other senators. So E.J. Antonio is out as the head of the BLS, or at least his nomination to be the permanent head. No word yet on who is going to replace him. Meanwhile, on the trade war front, the EU to ramp up tariffs on steel imports, mirroring U.S. duties. As they feign indignation and outrage at U.S. tariffs on European goods, the Europeans are doing the same thing to the Chinese, guys. The trade war is spreading here. The European Union is planning to boost tariffs on steel imports in an effort to help local producers cope with the impact of Asian overcapacity, as well as new trade barriers imposed by the U.S. The European Commission, the EU's executive arm, will propose early next week a long-term mechanism that will also reduce the bloc's existing quotas for foreign steel by almost half. The EU's industry chief, Stephanie Sejourn, told a closed-door event on Wednesday, according to a person familiar with his speech. Oh, I'm sorry. His speech. That's Stephane, not Stephanie. So, sorry, Steph. Didn't mean to do that to you. I get tripped up by European names sometimes. Steel imports beyond those quotas will be subject to the new tariff rate, which will mirror the policy of other jurisdictions, such as the United States, which imposes a 50% duty on imported steel. Now, here, the thing that I really want to draw your attention to, guys, is they're talking about Asian overcapacity is the reason why the European Union is putting tariffs on steel. And as it happens, just yesterday, I put out this video about Chinese overcapacity in mines, in steel production, in copper, in solar panels, electric vehicles, skyscrapers, and of course, commie bureaucrats. China's got way too much of all of it. Check out that video. It's in my feed here, guys, talking about just that very subject, if you don't mind me shamelessly self-promoting. Also, speaking of the trade war, Taiwan rejects U.S. demand for half of chips to be made in America. I am not the least bit surprised by this story. I'm not going to read too much into this because that's really the title summarizes the whole thing. The U.S. is like, we want you to make half of your chips in America. Give Intel a bunch of money so that they can steal market share from you. And Taiwan said no. I'm not the least bit surprised that Taiwan said no to that. It's a terrible deal for Taiwan. I know why the U.S. wants them to do that. I'm not saying it's a bad idea for us to make our own chips, but to expect the Taiwanese to go along with it was just never a reasonable expectation. They're not going to do that without some kind of being forced into it by tariffs or otherwise. But this is one of those situations with President Trump. What do you want more? Do you want your trade war or do you want your AI bubble? You can't keep both. If you want Taiwan to make their chips in the U.S., you're going to have to force them with strangulation tariffs. And of course, if you do that, you can't expect this build out in data centers to continue. And look, the build out in data centers, it's not going to continue. It's a bubble. It's going to burst anyway. You might as well force Taiwan to make their chips in the States while you're at it. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Energy restructures a deal with Lithium Americas for critical minerals. President Trump continues to run the government like a hedge fund here, guys. The U.S. Department of Energy has restructured its deal with Lithium Americas Corporation to take a 5% equity stake in the company and a separate 5% stake in the company's Thacker Pass Lithium joint venture with General Motors. The move is part of U.S. efforts to help counter China's control of the lithium market. The 5% equity ownership comes in the form of LAC warrants, LAC, that's the ticker for this company, and 5% ownership in the form of warrants in the joint venture. The updated agreement features strong loan modification and includes more than $100 million in new equity, stated the DOE. We've seen this before where the government converts loans into equity. This is what they did with Intel. This is what they're now doing with Lithium Americas. We're probably going to see more stories like this in the future. The government's stake in the Nevada project is part of U.S. President Trump's agenda to secure access to what is claimed to be the largest confirmed lithium deposit in North America. And just look at Lithium America Corp stock here, up 31.6% on this news this morning. This thing is ripping. $7.54, up $1.82 here. Government taking a stake. You know, when your business partner owns a money printer, it's not really bad for business. It might be bad for everybody else, but it's not bad for business. And Lithium America's responding accordingly. Meanwhile, Nike posts surprise sales growth, but warns of sluggish holiday season and bigger than expected tariff hit. You can always bank on CNBC to lead with the silver lining. All right. The only good thing in these Nike earnings was that 1% sales growth. Everything else just horrible earnings from Nike, absolutely horrible. And they're probably going to get worse. They're saying here, Christmas is going to suck. Tariffs are going to be worse than expected. Ooh, but a surprise sales growth, that 1% revenue jump. We're going to skip over all the warnings about a bigger than expected tariff hit. They're saying it's going to cost $1.5 billion next year for tariffs versus $1 billion this year. But we're going to go right to what Nike reported. Nike reported net income for the 3 months ended August 31st was $727 million, or 49 cents a share. That's compared with $1.05 billion, or 70 cents a share in the year-ago period. A big drop in net income from $1 billion to $727 million. Yikes. Sales rose to $11.72 billion. That's up 1% from $11.59 billion a year earlier. And it looks like that 1% sales growth is what's driving this move in Nike here. Revenue rose 1% during the quarter after Nike had previously said it anticipated sales would fall by mid-single-digit percentage in the period. So that was a positive surprise. Still, Nike's profits fell 31%, while gross margin dropped 3.2 percentage points to 42.2% during the quarter. Another warning sign to investors that its efforts to clear through old inventory are still ongoing. Oh my God, how do you overlook a 31% decline in profits? Tariffs and stockpiled inventory are just killing Nike here. All right, the sales rose 1%, probably driven by price increases. But good God, look at Nike stock this morning, though. 6% higher on this news. A 31% decline in profits, and the stock is up 6.5% now. Good God, what's going on? And, you know, I got to look at this company. It trades at a P.E. of 32. This company is trading at 32 times earnings, and their earnings are falling 31% year over year. Nike is grossly overvalued here. I know the stock is up this morning on that surprise in sales here, but I don't see things getting better for this company anytime soon. And we'll also talk about this one pretty quick here. Mortgage refinance demand plunges by 21% as interest rates hit a three-week high. God, this is, again, this is one of those stories where the title pretty much sums everything up. A 21% drop in demand for refis on higher interest rates. And interest rates hitting a three-week high. It has only been about 2.5-3 weeks since the Fed cut rates. Now, when we report this demand, it's week-ago numbers. So this is 2 weeks after the Fed cuts. Interest rates hit a three-week high. You kind of see here how the Fed does not directly control interest rates in the mortgage market. Just a reminder, you know, if you guys are sitting there out and they're home builders, or if you're like, oh, don't worry, my commercial real estate investments are going to do great now that the Fed is cutting rates. The Fed does not directly control that, not without printing money and buying those securities, those bonds outright. And right now, the Fed is not doing that. Most people think the Fed is eventually going to do that. See also $3,900 gold, but they haven't done it yet. And so for now, the Fed is still unwinding its balance sheet at a snail's pace. And interest rates are, you know, 25 basis point cut, just not going to be enough to save this commercial and this residential real estate market. Meanwhile, Yemen's Houthis say they will target U.S. oil firms with sanctions. It looks like the country of Yemen is turning into a glorified toll booth for ships where you will pay the protection racket or face the missiles. That seems like what's going on with the Houthis. They're going to sanction U.S. oil firms. Okay, I'm glad the Houthis can spell sanction here. But Yemen's Houthis will target U.S. oil majors, including ExxonMobil and Chevron, with sanctions, a body affiliated with the Iran-backed militia said on Tuesday. The Sana'a-based Humanitarian Operations Coordination Center, a body set up last year to liaise between Houthi forces and commercial shipping operators, sanctioned 13 U.S. companies, 9 executives, and 2 vessels. And why do we care about Houthi sanctions? Because the Houthis on Monday claimed responsibility for attacking a Dutch cargo ship in the Gulf of Aden with a cruise missile, injuring 2 crew and leaving the vessel ablaze and adrift. Because they're still shooting at the boats. That's what's going on. The Houthis are still shooting at the boats. We went in there, we bombed a bunch of stuff, we blew up a bunch of oil facilities, we fired a bunch of missiles that we need for a hypothetical conflict in the South China Sea. Eventually, we realized we were firing off too many missiles. We lost 2 F-18s to accidents. One fell overboard when a carrier had to turn to avoid a missile. Another one crashed in an accident. Actually, I think that was friendly fire. Either way, we left the Red Sea, guys. We pulled out. We lost that fight. We won all the battles, but we lost the fight because the Houthis are still blowing up the boats. And look, we should have. Most of the commerce that transits the Red Sea is commerce between China and Europe. Why should the United States spend missiles it doesn't have, risk lives we can't afford to lose, to protect European to Chinese commerce? especially when we're putting tariffs at the same time on all both of those countries. So the Houthis are still doing their thing, blowing up the boats. We also got this one here. This is a kind of a crazy story. It came out yesterday. Trump RX. What the heck is that about? AstraZeneca, Sanofi surge on optimism. Pharma can clinch U.S. price deals. This story broke yesterday, and there's expansion on it today. AstraZeneca and Roche Holdings and Sanofi led gains among European drug makers on optimism that rival Pfizer's pricing agreement with the U.S. paves the way for others to strike similar deals. Pfizer secured a three-year grace period from President Donald Trump's promised tariffs on drugs in a deal announced on Tuesday, providing a blueprint that could be replicated by other European drug companies, J.P. Morgan analyst Richard Vosser said in a note. Pfizer agreed to sell some medicines at a 50% average discount on a direct-to-consumer website called TrumpRx. Okay, that's interesting. First of all, Trump putting his personal brand on what I believe is going to be a government website. That's a little all right. But a 50% discount, that is significant. And it looks like TrumpRx is an initiative intended to allow Americans to pay for prescriptions at discounted rates negotiated by the government. The deal will prompt other negotiations and should result in a broadly manageable impact from the so-called most favored nation policy, according to Vosser. This TrumpRx website, guys, what it looks like this is, and I have mixed feelings on this, it's just what it is. It looks like it's a government website where people can buy medicine for cash directly without going through insurance. The government is creating an option to cut out insurance. So I have mixed feelings about that. Cutting out, I hate the medical insurance industry. I think they're freaking snakes. I think they are the reason why healthcare has become so unaffordable. I think the Affordable Care Act created a windfall for them. Ever since we made healthcare affordable, healthcare has gotten less affordable. The insurance companies have gotten incredibly wealthy. These two things are not unrelated. So a website that allows customers to pay cash without going through insurance and dealing with all that, I like the option. It may be cheaper for some, it may be not. But the fact that the government is going to run that website and the government is going to negotiate those prices, I don't like that. So there's a little bit to like here. There's a little bit not to like. Something's got to be done in healthcare because they're strangling people. The worst people among us are getting obscenely wealthy off of this. Something's got to work. Something's got to change here. I don't know if TrumpRx is going to solve this problem. Probably not. But at the very least, there's movement there. People will have the option. And of course, every show we have to devote a little bit of time to private equity and private credit. And we've got this one in the Daily Upside dated just this morning. Move over State Street. JP Morgan becomes the latest to file for a private credit ETF. What's private is increasingly becoming public, or at least retail. Ah, that's the word there, retail. Pay attention to that one. This week, JP Morgan Asset Management got in line to be the next ETF issuer dabbling in private credit. The firm filed Tuesday with the Securities and Exchange Commission for approval of its total credit ETF, a product that would allocate up to 15% of its assets to private credit. The U.S. corporate credit market is increasingly converging as issuers move fluidly between public bonds and private credit, said Jed Laskowski, global head of private markets and customized solutions for JP Morgan Asset Management. The private credit market can add yield and diversification benefits to portfolios while taking on a boatload of new risk. And investors are increasingly interested in investing actively across public and private credit spectrum. The firm declined to comment on the product filing itself. Look, the key word here, private credit is becoming increasingly retail. That's what it is. Why would you put private credit into a publicly traded ETF? To make it easier to sell to people who don't know what they're doing. That's what JP Morgan is doing here. They've got all of this debt that is owned by companies that don't want to hold this debt anymore because they know most of it is not going to get paid back. What do? Put all that debt in a box, write ETF on it, hand it off to Robinhood to sell to retail investors, or better yet, send those ETFs to hide in things like target date retirement funds, 401ks, IRAs. You know where this is going, guys. They are looking for bag holders. And so they're making it as easy as possible for retail to spend their money on this crap because they need to get it off their books before they accurately mark it to market. Don't let them get away with it. And I just want to say thank you very much to M&J who said, I don't know how to do this. Eric, how do I pronounce it? Eric K. Hi, Eric K. Jack is going to explain how to see what is in your 401k I'm in. I've seen a lot of questions like this. How do I know what's in my 401k? Look, guys, the easiest way to do it is to open the prospectus. When you look at your 401k, you're going to see a fund. It's different on every platform. Every user interface is different. But you can typically click on the fund, and there should be some option on the screen to expand the details and look at what the fund is holding. If not, you can Google the name of that fund and the prospectus and probably find a PDF. Now, beyond that, when you open up the prospectus, not all prospectus are created equally. Some just list generic information like we are allocated this percent to this sector, and this sector, and they don't actually list the specific holdings. The best option is once a year when you get these big fat freaking packets mailed to you at the end of the year, and they say, here's what your money is in. And most people just take those things and throw them right in the garbage or maybe the recycling bin. Maybe they shred it because they're worried about identity theft. But hiding in those big fat reports is the specific holdings. And guys, it's very labor intensive. If you really want to know where private credit is hiding in these funds, it's going to be very labor intensive. I may do a video on demonstrating how to do this with an example fund, but it's going to be exhausting, guys. There's no easy way around this. There's no like magic button to click, a box to check to say, don't put any of my money into private credit. It doesn't exist. And as a matter of fact, they're making it intentionally difficult for you to know if your money is being put in this. There's no easy outs here, guys. There really isn't. But thank you very much, M&J and Eric Nausel, Eric K. Thank you, Eric K. I appreciate that. That is a tough one to pronounce, guys. And pronunciation, clearly not my strong suit. Thank you, M&J, for everything you do for the channel. Mr. BTB, who's always trying to get my channel banned just for pronouncing the name, says, hi, Jack. Something you never want to say on a plane. Hi, BTB. How are you doing? Thank you for supporting the channel. You're awesome. I noticed that Tom Cruise there. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that. Hey, Wangler. Whoa, a red one. Thank you very much, Wangler, for the generosity. I appreciate that so much. He says, Jack, celebrating my first day of retirement. All right. I am living vicariously through Wangler because I think retirement's probably going to go down in history as a failed social experiment. It's not going to work. The numbers don't add up. But hey, Wangler, you get to enjoy it. Congratulations, brother. He says, can watch NSF Live now daily. Hey, your retirement dreams come true. Really appreciate your work. Thank you. Well, Wangler, congratulations on your retirement. Enjoy it, sir. And I really appreciate the generosity and all the time you spent watching NSF. Thank you, sir. Best of luck to you in your retirement. Congratulations, Nacho Man Randy Savage. Another red one from the top turnbuckle. Thank you so much, Nacho Man. I appreciate that very much. No comment here. I don't know if we miss the comment somewhere else. Mish, send me a text if we missed something from Nacho Man. Otherwise, thank you very much, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel. That's awesome. Thank you so much, guys. Really, really generous. The Melonheads are awesome. Metal Seer, who's been a Melonhead member for 8 months. Thank you, Mish. I got your message. Says, what if Congress salary docked every shutdown day? You know, I can't remember who it was that said this, but somebody, it was along these lines of like a penalty for the congressman if they suck at their job, which they all clearly suck at their job. But it was something along the lines of if the government does not pass a balanced budget, every single member of Congress and the Senate would be ineligible for re-election. If we were to pass that piece of legislation, which is a pipe dream, it's never going to happen, bingo, the U.S. fiscal problems would be solved overnight. I don't remember who specifically said that, but it's kind of along the lines of what you're doing here. Now, here's the thing, Metal Seer. Congress doesn't make their money from their salary. Congressional salaries are ridiculously low. Congress makes their money from some very well-timed stock trades, from money being donated to super PACs that pay their relatives consulting salaries, from speaking fees, from the revolving door of congressmen to lobbyists when they get out of office. That's how these guys make their money. So docking their salary would not motivate them to do a better job. Making them ineligible for re-election, taking away their power, that would motivate them to do a better job, but neither is going to happen because the only way to get that done would be for Congress to pass it themselves. They're not going to do that. Thank you very much, Metal Seer, for supporting the channel. Hunt and Cover, been a Melonhead for 19 months. Thank you, Hunt and Cover. He says, government down, Jack is up. Nice super chats. Yes, perhaps an inverse correlation there. Jack's prosperity is indirectly proportional to that of the federal government. I think you'll probably find that's true for most people now that I think about it. Huh, what an incredible macroeconomic microcosm this channel is turning into. Thank you so much, Hunt and Cover, for supporting the channel. I appreciate it. And for the laugh. Hey, my man, Alex. Thank you, Alex, for gifting 10 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Alex, you are awesome, brother. Thank you for everything you do for the channel. Wink, wink, hint, hint. Nobody Special Finance memberships. You 10 new Melonheads. Say thank you to Alex in the comments while you're at it. And just a reminder, guys, if you got one of those memberships, you get one free super chat every month. So use that, and I will read and respond to your questions or comments live on the air. Thanks again, Alex. Hunt and Cover, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. He says, I got to get in on Wealthy Wednesday. Have a good day, Jack. I don't know what Wealthy Wednesday is, but I am happy to be partaking of it. Thank you so much, Hunt and Cover. Guys, you're awesome this morning. I really appreciate that. And thank you also to Charles. By the way, Hunt and Cover, good to see you, brother. Glad you're doing better. Charles G., thank you, sir, says, so apparently ghost jobs is caused by companies fake hiring so they can use it as an excuse to get H-1B visas. I see someone's channeling Amanda Goodall here, the jobs chick on Twitter, by saying they can't hire Americans. You know, I haven't pulled on this thread specifically. I think it's time I do. I probably need to go down this rabbit hole here. But you post a job that you have no intention of filling, all right? And then you never fill it. You leave it up there for 2 years. Then you go to the government and you say, I need an H-1B visa to hire a guy from India to do this job for 85 cents on the dollar, by the way. Oh, look, I've had this posting for 2 years. I can't get an American to do the job. And then all of a sudden it sails right through. That's one of the reasons why President Trump is putting this $100,000 price tag on the H-1B visas. It's supposed to be a way to filter out the people that are just trying to arbitrage foreign labor versus people who legitimately have jobs that I need this specific individual to do. Nobody else can do the job, which is what the H-1B is supposed to do. And if the job is that important, really that vital, then you should be able to come up with $100,000 to do it. Now, if the whole point is to just save money on your freaking call centers, then no, it won't be worth it to have the $100,000 payment. So that's what they're supposed to do. I don't know if it's going to work or not, but thank you very much, Charles G. I appreciate that. H-1B visa abuse, I think we will be hearing more about that in the months ahead, especially as the job market deteriorates. Spud Ruckus, thank you for being a Melonhead for 12 months. He says, so close to the like goal. Come on, Melonheads. Well, you know what? Let's use that super chat to say hit the like button and the subscribe button right next to it. All that good algorithmic, wonderful stuff. Sure, thank you. Hit that like button, guys. M&J loves hitting that like goal every day. I see you guys in the comments. Like, just one more. Come on, I know that one guy out there is about to hit that like button, and he hasn't yet for some reason. I don't know. Maybe I rubbed him the wrong way. I don't know. I can be abrasive at times. I don't know. My mom says I'm nice. Thanks again, Spud Ruckus. I love that name, by the way. Ian Ross says it was Warren Buffett who said that about Congress. I thought it was Buffett, but I didn't want to misquote. I didn't know who. Okay, so it really was Buffett who said that. That's good. By the way, that then is the second time in as many days that I quoted Buffett. I used the when the tide goes out, we find out who's been swimming naked quote just yesterday to describe another auto parts manufacturer going bankrupt because of he had pledged the same collateral for multiple loans with banks. Basically, the same thing Tricolor Auto did. Was it First Auto was the company that did that? I don't know, but I have Loxagon Apathy from Unicus Research coming on the channel later today to talk about WTF is going on in the auto market ever since we've seen this Tricolor bankruptcy, this first auto bankruptcy. Lox has done a lot of really good research into auto ABS over these last few weeks. She is going to be sharing that with us. So look for that one possibly later today, maybe tomorrow. Not sure if I'm going to be able to get that one up by tonight. But thank you, Ian, for supporting the channel and for clarifying that quote. RB Traj says, a prospectus only reports the assets at the end of the reporting period. That's important. assets are, they change daily, right? So it's, you're looking back at what they were. A fund could hop in and out of private assets without reporting. Yikes. Well, that's scary. That's terrifying. And you're right. They could. They could. They could hop in. They could hop out, make their report, get back in later. Maybe there's some other controls elsewhere, and the compliance people would be, you know, on the hook for making that legal or not. That's scary, guys. That's scary. You know, you should be able to know what you're invested in. Let's just put it that way. It should be easy for you to know what you're invested in. And the short answer is it ain't. It's not easy to know what you're invested in. And it's another reason why I think this whole, like I said it earlier in the show, this whole concept of retirement may go down in history as a failed social experiment. We are too irresponsible and too deceitful and too crooked to set aside huge swaths of our wealth entrusted by somebody else to grow over time and expect it to be able to pay for our golden years, especially as people enter the job market later, leave it sooner, life expectancy grows, healthcare costs keep growing. You know, I mean, the short answer to this, maybe we're all just going to have to work until we die. That is what people did for most of human existence. The whole concept of retirement is a social experiment that's only a few generations old, and it's not going so well. You may have noticed. Anyways, once again, though, congratulations, Wangler. At least Wangler gets to retire. So we're all living vicariously through Wangler. Live it up, Wangler. Like, we're all depending on you. We're pulling for you, man. All right, guys, I just want to say thank you so much. Hey, I really appreciate the generosity in the Super Chats today. You guys are freaking awesome. Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. Also, hit that like goal, that button. Let's get to M&J's goal. Hit the subscribe button while you're at it. Come on back tomorrow. Thanks again, guys, for the Super Chats. Also, thank you to my magnanimous melon heads on Patreon and YouTube for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.